Good morning.
Man, I think first service is louder than y'all.
Good morning. All right, everybody's awake. It was funny, I got up here for our first service, and within like 30 seconds, I started crying. I told everybody I think something was wrong with me today, but I was just kind of, it's fun when you get to kind of stand in the back. I usually sing up here on the worship team, and looking out and watching everybody sing is awesome. And then I was standing back there first service, and I was watching, and Whitney, if you don't know Whitney, she was just getting it. Wave, Whitney, come on. You can put your hand up right there. Everybody will see it. You and it. There you go. And I was watching her sing and just getting into it and knowing what Whitney was like before her relationship with God and knowing her now. And then today, during the second service, I'm standing back there next to my childhood best friend, Marlon, and knowing the stuff that Marlon's been involved in and where he's come over the past 2 years to see God stepping and change his life. And we're singing a song about God blessing and changing lives. And we want you to know, if you're a guest here at the Crossings this morning, you're in a place where you're with a bunch of members here who are just really screwed up people who God has placed back together. And it's an exciting church to be a part of because God really is good at taking broken things and fixing them. And that's what kind of church that we are. And so there's no, you don't have to worry. You can sit back, you can relax, and know you're amongst normal people, I guess. Right now at the Crossings, we're in a series of lessons, and it's called That the God Question. And what we've been doing is we've been dealing with questions that Jesus asked two people. The first lesson we started out, and the first lesson, the question was, why are you so afraid? And it was the story of Jesus being in this boat, and there's a storm going on, and the apostles are all freaking out. They're losing it. And here's Jesus in this boat in the middle of the ocean in a storm, and he's sleeping. And they wake him up, and he looks at him, and he asks a question only God could ask in the middle of a storm in the ocean. He says, why are you so afraid? And he's trying to tell him, hey, you're with me. You're good to go. And the next lesson is a guy that came to Jesus, or Jesus came by him, and he was sick. And Jesus looks at him and says, do you want to be healed? And only God can ask a question like that and get away with it, because that's a stupid question to ask a sick person, isn't it? Do you want to be healed? But here's God, and Jesus was trying to get to something deeper with him with that question. We talked about he asked his apostles, who do you say I am? And the answers that they gave back. And then last week we talked about Jesus looking at these men that he spent time with and this man and saying, how can you betray me after all this time? And these are all questions that Jesus asked people. And you and I face those same questions in a lot of ways today. And we've got to be willing to look at these questions and ask ourselves the hard questions and see what kind of answer we're willing to give God. And today we're dealing with a passage out of Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52. And I'm going to read that and then we're going to get into it. It says, Jesus and his disciples went to Jericho. And as they were leaving, they were followed by a large crowd. A blind beggar by the name of Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When he heard that Jesus was from, Jesus from Nazareth, he shouted, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. And many people told the man to stop, but he shouted even louder, son of David, have pity on me. And Jesus stopped and said, call him over. They called to the blind man and said, don't be afraid. Come on, he's calling for you. The man threw off his coat and jumped up and ran to Jesus. Jesus asked, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man answered, Master, I want to see. Jesus told him, you may go. Your eyes are healed because of your faith. And right away the man could see. And he went with Jesus. You see, this man comes to Jesus and here he is and he's blind. He's begging. He's sitting there on the side of this road and he's screaming out to Jesus. And Jesus has him come over and Jesus looks at this guy and says, what is it exactly that you want me to do for you? And this blind man looks and he says, what I want to do, Master, I want to be able to see. He wanted something from Jesus. And in our lives, we have that same question posed to us. Jesus looks at us and he says, man, what is it? What exactly do you want from me? And there are all kinds of things. Everybody in here, you may have a different answer for that. For some people, you look and you say, man, right now things are just really tight. Ultimately, even though we would all have different answers, the real answer is we want God to bless us. And for some of you, that might show up in different forms. For some of you may think, man, things are so tight right now. I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. Jesus, I need money. For somebody else sitting out there, you may look and you say, man, I really want a mate. I want, God, give me that woman. I need a woman.
And you know, or maybe for you, you're looking and saying, man, I just want a man so bad. I want that person to be alongside to walk with in life. That's what I'm longing for. God, that's what I want you to bless me with. For somebody else, it may be you look and you want a job. You're like, I've been out of work and I need a job. God, bless me with a job. For some of you, it may be something you deal with in your life, some kind of struggle, some kind of addiction. You're saying, God, I want you to help me overcome this. Somebody else, it may be influence. You just, God, I want to be someone. Bless me with influence. I want to be someone who makes a difference. I don't want to be somebody who just saunters through life, but I want people to be able to listen to me. I want to make a difference and influence and change people's lives. And as you look at all those things, I don't think that there's anything wrong with any of those things in and of themselves. But the problem is that so many times we get so caught up in what we want to do that it begins to rule and take over our lives. And in 1 Timothy 6, verse 9, Paul is talking to Timothy. He says, people who want to be rich fall into all sorts of temptations and traps. They are caught by foolish and harmful desires that drag them down and destroy them. Some people want money so much that they give up their faith and it has caused them a lot of pain. And he says, man, there are people sometimes we get so focused on what it is that we want, what it is that we desire, that we completely just throw everything else to the side and we forget about it. There's another story where Jesus talks about this rich man. This guy has a lot of good stuff. And he comes to Jesus and he says, Jesus, I want to follow you. That's what I want. I want to follow you. And Jesus looks at him and goes, man, that's awesome. Okay, here's what you got to do. All you need to do is go and sell everything you have and then you can come along with me. And the Bible says that that man walked away sad or disappointed from Jesus. He doesn't end up leaving with Jesus. He walks away sad and disappointed because Jesus places a choice before him. And he says, you can have all that stuff that you already have, or you can have faith in me and you can follow me and trust that everything's going to be okay. And this man walks away disappointed because he was so wrapped up in his desires and what he wanted. And he walks away sad. And the horrible thing about that, I believe, is that God wants, he desires to bless our lives. You know, this man Bartimaeus that Jesus comes across, I believe that Jesus wanted to heal him. I believe that God wants us to have the kind of lives that he promises us. That he wants great things for us, but I also believe that that doesn't just naturally happen. And I also believe that whenever our desires supersede our willingness to obey and believe in Jesus, he says, I'm sorry, I can't give you that. And so what we've got to do, what we need to do today is you need to ask yourself, man, what is it exactly that I want from Jesus? And maybe you've wanted it for a long time and maybe you're sitting there today thinking, man, I want God to bless my life, but he just hasn't been. And I'm hoping that today as we look at this man that we're able to identify some things about who he was and about who Jesus was that allows us to be able to say, Jesus, this is what I desire. And for God to be able to look back and smile and say, and I'm going to hook you up. I'm going to give you something great. But it really is dependent upon our response. You see, the key to receiving from Jesus is faith. He looks at this man and he says, what do you want from me? And he says, Master, I want to see. And Jesus tells this guy in verse 52, he says, go, Jesus told him, for your faith has made you well. This man wanted to be able to see, and Jesus said, the fact that you believe the way that you do, your faith has made you better. In Mark chapter 9, verse 23, God's word says, everything is possible for him who believes. He's saying, listen, if you desire something, your faith can bring that about in your life. But if you look at the next passage on your notes, James chapter 2, verse 14, this is what James says. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith, but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? See, I think so many times we say, God, I want you to bless my life. And we was and you know, people all over the place would say, yes, I'm a man or I'm a woman of faith. And we need to ask ourselves, well, what does that really mean to be a man or woman of faith? Because James here says there's different kinds of faith. And he says, can that kind of faith save you? See, people say, yeah, I'm a man of faith. But really what that means for most people in our culture is, yeah, I go and I sit my rear in a seat on Sunday mornings at a church building. For most people, that's what they think it means to be a man of faith, is that they have this intellectual belief that there's this guy up in the sky who's taking care of things, and it really doesn't impact them in any way other than maybe they show up at church. Most people, a lot of people in our culture today would say, I'm a man of faith and I don't even need to have anything to do with church. But whenever you look at what God has to say about what faith is and the way it works and what it does in our lives, it makes a difference. He says it doesn't do you any good to say that you have faith, but it doesn't show up in your actions. When he says, can that kind of faith save you? That isn't like, oh, it's up to you. I don't know. What do you think? Can it save you? No, what he's doing is he's implying to us and helping it, imploring us to realize that a faith that does not take action, a faith that does not show up in your life, is not the kind of faith that can save you. And it definitely is not the kind of faith that God wants to bless or is able to bless. And so today we've got to examine our faith. We've got to examine and ask ourselves, man, I know I say I'm religious. I know I would say I'm a Christian. I know I say I have faith. You probably wouldn't be here for a lot of you if you at least weren't interested or desired that. But what kind of faith do you have? Is it really having an impact on who you are, on the decisions that you make? And that's an important question for us. Can that kind of faith save me? Is the kind of faith that you have going to allow Jesus to say, I want to bless you with this? Or is it the kind of faith that God's going to look at and say, that's not really faith at all? And he's going to have to withhold the great things in life that he has planned for you because you aren't faithful. See, I think whenever we look at this man, this beggar, Bartimaeus, there are some things that we can pick out about the way that he believed that says, hey, this is how you can have a faith that makes a difference in your life. And the first thing I think that is that this man had a desperate faith. It says, Jesus and his disciples went to Jericho. A blind beggar by the name of Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. Now, when we read that, I think sometimes we look at that and we're like, oh, yeah, I can see how this guy could be desperate. I mean, he's blind and he's begging, right? But there are some things about this passage that if you don't look a little deeper that you miss that are so good. There are so many things in the Bible and passages that if you just kind of breeze through it and skim over it, you miss some really good stuff. You see, the city where Jesus and his disciples are going to is Jericho. And Jericho had been conquered years and years before by Joshua. And it was a place that was, when those walls fell, he cursed that place. Jericho was known as being a place of the accursed. It was the place where people did not want to go. It was one of those places you're like, I don't want to have anything to do with that place. And here come Jesus and his disciples, and they're coming into this city of the cursed, and there's this blind beggar on the side of the road. See, I used to think like, you know, whenever I would identify, there would be someone I would know with a handicap. And you look and you say, oh, you know, and there's a sympathy and empathy that takes place. But it is really hard for us to understand, I believe, exactly how desperate you can feel when you're dealing with a serious handicap in your life. And I used to think, oh, yeah, I get it. But then I met this girl named Lindsay Stark. And some of you know Lindsay. I don't know if Lindsay's here right now or not. But some of you know Lindsay. She's in a wheelchair. And Lindsay is the most fun. We tease each other. We give each other a hard time all the time. But when I met Lindsay, I looked at her and I thought, man, I could understand how that could be a desperate situation. She's stuck in this chair and it could be so difficult. But the more I got to know her and the more my heart got involved and the more I came to love Lindsay, I started realizing even more desperate because we would be sitting in my office at Lindenwood and I'd be sitting there, I would get a phone call and Lindsay would be so upset and so flustered because she couldn't get to her class because a car parked in front of the handicap ramp. And I thought, yeah, I get it. I understand how desperate. No, I didn't really get it before that. Because I had parked in front of those ramps and not thought of it. And then Lindsay calls and she's like, hey, I can't get out of my van. Well, why can't you get out of your van, Lindsay? Because somebody parked too close to the handicap lines. And if I let my door down, it's going to hit their car. And I thought at one time, yeah, I get it. But guess what? I didn't get it. You know why? No, I didn't get it. I didn't get the desperation because I'd parked too close to the handicap lines before. And now I'm much more aware of those things, but I still don't really grasp what it means to be in that situation. Here's this guy on the side of the road. He's blind. He's a beggar. He doesn't have anywhere to go. It's a miserable, desperate situation. And it's one of those things to where, you know, you look at the guy's name. His name is Bartimaeus, which really means Bartimaeus means son of Timaeus. But if you look at what Timaeus' name really meant, is his family name was polluted or sickened. So this is the son of the polluted. He's in the cursed city. He's a blind beggar with nowhere to go. And he's the son of the polluted or the sick or the sickened. He is in a desperate situation. And I look at that passage and as I read those things, in a sense it makes me smile because I know that that's what kind of church we are. We're a church full of people who have been in desperate situations. But what the awesome thing about God is that God can turn these desperate situations and give us a desperate faith. He can take those times to where it's so bad that we just, you don't have anywhere else to turn. For a lot of you, that's where you were. For some of you, that's probably where you are right now. You're in a desperate situation, and it calls you to have a desperate faith so that God can make a difference in your life. Right now, I'm going to ask TC to come up, and we're going to kind of do a little interview here with TC for a minute. Because when I met TC, TC was a mess. And as I was reading through this passage, getting ready for this sermon, and I was looking at this guy, and I was like, man, this guy's, he was going through so much junk, and he was so desperate, and he was so screwed up in such a horrible situation. I was like, that was TC. And actually, there were a lot of you, so don't get too happy. There were a lot of you. I was like, as a matter of fact, why don't we just have the whole church come up here and we'll interview everybody? But, you know, it was one of those things where when I read this, I really did think about TC. And so I asked him if he'd be willing to come up and kind of share with us a little bit about where he was and what his life has been like. So, TC, if you could describe that year that we met you, what would you say that year of life was like when we first met? You muted? It's Charlie's mic. Tap into it. Hello? You sure?
Hello?
You're muted right there.
Hello?
There we go. All right. So, TC, how would you describe that year before we met? What had your life been like for that time period?
So, going back a little bit, more than a year, maybe a year and a half, I was a college wrestler at Missouri Baptist. My sophomore year, I got voted by my team and the coaches as one of the captains, which is uncommon, but it's pretty uncommon, I guess. That a sophomore, it's usually juniors and seniors that fill that role, but. So I wrestled, I blew out my shoulder that year, concussion, a lot of different things. And in that time, I started drinking. And not just drinking, but drinking a lot, because I didn't have wrestling anymore. That was the thing that drove my life, the thing that got me through. So I started drinking so much to where I was mixing screwdrivers on my way to work, in the car. And usually it's orange juice, splash of vodka. But for me, it was vodka, splash of orange juice. It was a lot, and I would drink on my way there. I was drinking and driving a ton. One morning I woke up, I don't remember how I got home, and me and my roommate left, and whenever I went outside, I had driven over the curb and then over the parking curb, and my car was in the front lawn of our apartment. And my roommate's like, aren't you going to move your car? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I look over, and I was like, oh, my car's up there. That's the kind of stuff I was doing. It was just crazy. I moved to Gulf Shores for 4 months, and all I did was party down there. There was times I woke up on the beach, next to a bench, and didn't remember how I got there. I was making, $100, $150, $200 a night, and I was going to the bar and blowing most of that, on drinks for me, for whoever, just whatever, just living wild. It was absolutely crazy, for me. I was at Missouri Baptist, and I would take a styrofoam cup and I would go out to my car and get alcohol at my car and walk around campus drinking, and the immediate expulsion for that there. So crazy.
You know, when we first met TC, I remember there are stories that TC has told me about him and his roommates. I mean, things that that we definitely can't get into here.
Yeah, we don't talk about that here.
But they're the kind of things, in all honesty, they're the kind of things that even most people out in the world, people who don't have any regard for God whatsoever, would be like, you what? And those kind of things that I remember having conversations with TC about. And even now, just, I know there are things that he talks about that he lives with regret from things from that time, from that period, because he was a mess. And when we met him, he was so desperate for something different because of the way he had been living. But also, I think, TC, when you look back over your life in general, your childhood, what was it like? What was it like?
It's kind of funny, the stories that I tell, not funny, but ironic, the stories that I just told you, some of them, because growing up, that's what I grew up in, and I swore to myself, I knew alcohol was a problem for my family, and I was like, I'm not going to be that guy, right? I don't know how many of you guys have ever said that in your head, I'm not going to be that guy. Well, I had turned into that guy. There was times where if my dad, I remember one night, my dad, I was slept in my mom's bed. I think we had fallen asleep watching a movie. And my dad came home and was drunk and high, and they got in a fight. And I remember him throwing my mom, like as an 8-year-old kid, like throwing my mom into a wall and pulling the phone out of the wall and throwing the phone at my mom. Like, and there's absolutely nothing I could do about it. I was petrified. Like, we had one of those old water beds where it was like the bed and then like the mirrors and all the doors. And there's that little crawl space between the bed and the wall and the frame. And I remember like scurrying and getting between that and just listening to my dad beat my mom. Like, and that was all drugs and alcohol and just all that stuff. My mom abusing pain medications, divorce, my stepdad, and my sister, if she's in here, she wouldn't mind me telling you this. My stepdad sexually abused my sister. Like, all this just dysfunction and crazy stuff. And, like, I had sworn not to repeat the cycle, but I was on the path of repeating the cycle. It was crazy looking back.
You know, and it's weird because TC and our lives have actually been intertwined before we ever even knew each other, because we knew some of TC's family when we lived in Illinois. And, you know, I look at this man, this Bartimaeus that we're talking about, and, you know, his name is Son of the Polluted. And that's one of the reasons whenever I looked at this passage and I was thinking about it, that TC came to mind, because not only had TC really gotten himself into his decisions, putting himself in a horrible position that year that we met, but I look back over TC's life, and I think TC would tell you, and I think Mallory would also say the same thing, that they very easily could have been named the Son of the Polluted, the Son of the Sickened, because of where their lives had been. And it had led them to through some really desperate and horrible times. TC, what other, during that time when we first met, what other things were going on that kind of made you personally really, other than the misery you brought upon yourself, but really kind of made you desperate for something different?
Yeah, so I started coming to the Crossings in March. Well, that, like, October, I'd gotten kicked off my college wrestling team because of all the drinking and the partying I'd gotten into. Went from, like, 1 year being a captain to the next year being kicked off the team. And just crazy. So then absolutely no wrestling at that point, so I really started drinking a lot. So drinking that January, there's a family that I was close to, and I'm still fairly close to them. They had two sons, Eric and Jason, and they were brothers. And they were 4 and 5 years younger than me. And for Jason's birthday, we had decided we're going to drink. Like, and I'm 20, almost 21, and they're in high school, like freshman and sophomore in high school. And I'm encouraging them to do this. Well, that night, I encouraged Eric, hey, there's this girl, she's really attractive. You know, I encouraged him to cheat on his girlfriend. And he had been with her for like 3 or 4 years. And I'm supposed to be like their big brother. And that's the kind of guy I was. Well, she found out. She broke up with him. And every 16-year-old boy who's been with a girl for 3 years, it's the end of the world. So one night I stopped by to check on him, just to see how he was doing. Because I felt guilty, you know. I was a big reason. And when I talked to him, he's just like, I just don't know how I'm going to go on. She doesn't want anything to do with me. And I was like, hey, man, it'll be okay. There's other girls. Like, just trying to encourage. But he seemed pretty sad and hopeless. So then when I was leaving the house, something just kept kind of tugging at me. Go back and check on Eric one last time. He's fine. A couple more steps, and I'm finally like, okay. So I go check his room. He's not there. Check the, if you're a teenage boy, you get bored, you go to the kitchen and you just open the fridge. You don't eat necessarily, you just open it and look. Like, I don't know, I'm 30 and I still do that. No, I'm good. And 5 minutes later, same thing. But so I checked the kitchen, he wasn't there. I checked the living room, bathroom. The only other place to go was the basement. And it wasn't uncommon for any one of us to go down there. There was a wrestling mat down there and there was weights. And if you're frustrated, you can get that aggression out. Well, when I went down there, I turned a corner, and just like this pole right here next to Mitch, there was an extension cord tied to the bottom, looped over a rafter in the basement, and he was hanging there in the basement. And me and his brother get him down, and he was okay, in the sense that he was alive. But the cool thing, God had worked long before that to send Matt Colley, who was over there earlier, Matt Colley over on the church plant to wrestle on the same wrestling team as Eric. And so the team found out about it, and he started telling God, or telling Eric about the plans that God had for him and telling him the hope that God had for him. And so they started studying the Bible, and when they were studying the Bible, They're like, well, you're going to have to give some things up if you want this life that God has for you. Eric, what are some things? And the very first thing he said was, I need to get TC out of my life. And that's like crazy to me, like, because I should have been a big brother and I should have been a good man for them. But I was the furthest thing from that. And luckily, and I thank God every day that they did, Matt and Carrie were like, why don't you try to get him to come around first and show him this hope that you're starting to find? And he did. So he attacked me pretty hard. Like every day, hey, why don't you come? You can come stay the night Saturday. We'll do family dinner. Then you go to church. Oh, no, I'm fine. You know, whatever. You know, I'm fine. And so for like 3-4 weeks, and finally just to shut him up, I was like, okay, I'll come to this birthday party for Juan Black, whoever that is. Like, I'll go. Like,
tell him about Chandler.
Yeah. So I go, and like they're got the red cups. And if you've ever been to like a party, you know red cups means like beer in there. So I go and I'm like, huh, what's in that cup there? What you got? You know, and it's like Fitz's root beer and cream soda. And I'm like, who are these people? Like, this is crazy. I had been out so late the night before. The last thing I remember hearing that night was, we can buy more beer at 6, like in the morning. Like, and I was still buzzed, like going to the party, like. And so, like, I go, and I was like, man, these people are nice. You know, they're really cool. So I went to church the next day, and I was like, man, these people are, like, genuine. Because I'd been around people who, like Carrie was saying, were, you know, they put their butt in a seat on Sunday, and that's what they did. But these people, like, cared about me. Like, so much that the first, like, cross chat I went to, like, at the end of the night, like, people were talking to me and everything. And this guy Chandler was like, hey, man, let me get your number. We can hang out. And I was like, okay. So I gave him a mom on my way home. And like, I was like, man, everyone was so nice. They were, didn't need a drink to have a good time. And this Chandler guy got my number, and he asked me to see a movie. And I'm like, do I have a date? Like, I had no clue, like, at all. Because, like, I had never had someone, like, invest, like, in my life like that and want to know about me as a person. They were about TC the wrestler. He's a good wrestler. He adds to the team. It was TC is fun to go out with because he buys people drinks and we have a good time, and anything can happen when they're out with TC, like that type of deal, like anything, you know, stuff Carrie was saying, like that we don't talk about on stage. So I wasn't used to that, and it was just crazy. Like, and I saw people who loved God like with all their heart and who were chasing after God and who had been desperate. Like, when we study the Bible, Carrie, like, I'd be like, but Carrie, I've done this. And Carrie would be like, well, this person at our church, they did that, and now look at them. And I'm like, so-and-so did that, now they're here? I'm like, whoa, okay, I got some hope. And I was like, but Carrie, ha. I was, like, trying to one-up, like, God's power. Like, oh, but I've done this. And he's like, but I have this person and this person. I'm like, oh, like, everything that I had done, God had, like, put someone in that was like, oh, and, like, provided that hope that I didn't think I could have. And I was, like, so desperate that, like, I skipped class. Carrie, I don't think, knew it at the time, but I like just totally. I had class on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that was it. So I had like 4 classes that I skipped. It was like a Tuesday. I skipped all my classes, and we started studying the Bible, and he talked about like the plans that God had for me and seeking God. And we got done, and Carrie's like, "So you want to get together sometime and study some more?" And I'm like, well, I don't have anything to do. Like, you know, let's do another one. Yeah, I don't have anything to do right now. Let's do another one. And so we talk about the Word of God. Now like, he's like, when do you want to get together again? It's like, let's do some more. Let's do some. And I eventually got through like studies that normally take people 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, in the case of Zung, a year to do a longer time than a day. And I was so desperate for something different and to have God in my life. That's what I wanted to do. And since then, I haven't missed a thing other than like being sick or whatever. I've been, this is like 9 years ago, I haven't had a drop of alcohol in 9 years. My wife, she's back there. If you see her, you look at me and you look back at her and you look back at me and I'm like, man, God is powerful because she is amazing. If you know my kids, they are just, Audrey has the most beautiful curly hair and big blue eyes. couldn't imagine. The cycle has just been broken in our family. My son is a wild man. He double-legged Gabriel earlier, and I was so proud of him. And like, he's choking, and he climbs, and he does all this stuff. And he's just beyond what I could have had. And I know that had my life continued the way it was going, I may not have been hanging from a cord, but I may have killed someone drinking and driving, or myself. And, yeah, God is good.
All right. Thanks, Dick. You know, it's funny because TC was desperate enough and he had enough faith to realize that when you're in that position, it forces you to be honest. You know, I think a lot of times people say they have faith and they want to turn control over their lives to God, but they can't be honest enough to do that. They're not desperate enough to be honest about who they were. TC made no bones about it. He was a mess. I mean, the stuff he was telling me, I was like, you know, and he's saying, I was sitting there one-upping it. But in my head, I was like, dude, I can't believe this guy doesn't know me at all. And he's telling me these things. Like, I can't believe he's being this honest, but he was that desperate. You know, and it has been cool to watch TC. You know, he's got this awesome family, and to see that cycle being broke with them. And TC is actually leading out. We're launching a church in August in U City, and TC will be the campus minister, helping to lead that new church. You know, to see TC go from where he was to there, and even his sister, you know, I remember a couple weeks after TC became a Christian, he gets this phone call at CrossChat, and I can hear this girl going off on him, and he's going, no, I'm not going to buy you alcohol anymore. And I can hear her screaming and cussing and yelling and throwing a fit. And I'm like, give me the phone. So I get on the phone. She's like, who the beep is this? You know? And I was like, I'm TC's campus minister. I don't give a beep, you know, like put him back on the bleep and, you know, like just going off. And I was like, no, I'm not putting him back on the phone. He's not doing that. But I said, hey, we're having this campus retreat. You know, you should come check it out next week. Bleep, 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 bleep. You know, Mallory came to that campus retreat and she's been around since. And it's such a cool thing to see. And she was desperate as well. And she was also desperate enough to be honest. And she was desperate enough to put her faith in God and realize that she needed something different. In Jonah chapter 2, verse 7, it says, when I felt my life slipping away, then, O Lord, I prayed to you in your holy temple, and you heard me. And whenever we're desperate, and whenever there's horrible things going on, if we can be desperate enough to have genuine faith and to look to God and say, God, I'm looking to you. I need something different. I need you. That's when he's able to step in. Because in Mark chapter 2, it says something that we talk a lot about here at the Crossings. Jesus says, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but to call the sinners. We've got to be desperate in our faith. We have to be so desperate with our lives that we're able to be honest about who we are, where we're at, and how bad things have gotten. And we have to allow that desperation to turn into a desperate faith that says, I will do what I will give you control of my life. I trust you, Jesus. I want you to do this. That's what that man was doing as he was laying there. He was a miserable, blind beggar in a horrible city from a horrible past, and Jesus was able to say, I hear you. And he was so desperate that he turned to him. We have to have a desperate faith. The second thing is we have to have a determined faith. We have to allow it to become something that we become so determined about. Determined, first of all, to do what I can do. In Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 42, it says, when he heard that it was Jesus, he shouted. This guy was like, you know what? I may not be able to get over there to him. I may not, but I'm going to do what I can in order to come into contact with the power that's able to change my life. And so here he is, and he's laying there on the side of the road. He's yelling to Jesus. He's shouting to him. He's doing whatever he can to get Jesus' attention. In Judges chapter 6, verse 14, God is talking. He says, then the Lord turned to him and said, go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you. See, God knows that we don't have what it takes to fix ourselves. If we have what it takes to fix our problems, wouldn't we fix them? We would, right? But then there would be no need for God. And God's saying, listen, you give what you have. And here he is telling this man, saying, listen, you're going to win this battle not because you have it all together. He doesn't say go because you're strong enough to win this fight. He says, go with the strength you have, and I'm going to fill in where you're lacking. I'm going to make sure that you have what you need to win. Just like Bartimaeus, he's over there yelling. He can't heal himself, but he knows how to get in contact with somebody who can. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9, Paul's talking. And he says, "My gracious favor is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weakness so that the power of Christ might work through me. For when I am weak, then I am strong." You see, Paul understood you don't have to have it all together. What you have to do is you have to be determined to do what you can. God wants you to have a faith that doesn't just allow you to sit there on your rear and say, "Well, I wish things were better. God, would you just fix this already?" Because that's what most people do. They don't. They want the blessing that God says He can give us through faith, but they don't want to have the kind of faith that it takes in order to be able to be healed. Can that kind of faith save you? No. God is wanting you to know you have to be willing to do what it takes in order to be healed. Do you have the kind of faith that makes you so determined to do whatever it is you can? The second thing you have to have is a faith that makes you determined enough to ignore your critics. You see, this guy is sitting there and he's yelling to Jesus. And in the next verse, it says, people said, "Shut up." Some of the people yelled at him, but he only shouted louder and again, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And here he is screaming for Jesus. He's like, he's so determined that he is not going to allow these people around him, these critics, to shut him up because he wants a relationship with Jesus. He wants to be healed. You know, whenever I was working at Lindenwood, we're a campus ministry who's in a lot of ways different than most campus ministries because we're, like I said, we're just a big screwed up group of people who God has placed them back together. And there were people who didn't like how evangelistic our campus ministry, we call it ACB, it's a cross between. They didn't like how evangelistic they were. And they were doing everything they could to shut us down. And I remember one day coming onto campus and our school newspaper had written an article about our campus ministry. And it was trashing them pretty good. And it was basically saying, "Shut up. Go away already." And I remember when that article came out, I was sitting in my office and like people from our campus ministry started coming into the office, which wasn't like, you know, it was a normal thing. They were in there all the time. But I noticed like one came in and he had on his shirt, his big ACB shirt. And I'm like, "Oh, that's cool." And then more of them start coming in, ACB, ACB. And I'm like, weird, they're all wearing their ACB shirts together, which, you know, they wore them sometimes, but usually not in sync, right? You know, and here they come. Well, what I found out later was they were walking to their classes. And as they were walking to their classes, they're picking up this paper that's telling them to shut up. And they're seeing this article that's telling them, and they're all these critics, and they're reading the article, and then they're going back to their dorm rooms, and they're getting their ACB shirts, and they're putting their ACB shirts on, and then they're going back to class with their shirts on because they were saying, "I'm not shutting up. I'm determined. I'm going to be a person of faith. I don't care what the critics say. I don't care what people tell me to do. This is what I need." And they had a faith that determined that. And it was such an amazing thing to see taking place. And here they are telling them to shut up. In Proverbs 1 verse 10, it says, "When sinners tempt you, my son, don't give in to them." If you want to be blessed by God, if you want to be able to answer that question, you have to have a determined faith to do, first of all, what you can do. Second of all, to ignore your critics, to be able to overcome those things. Last night, one of our campus girls came over and she's been out of the country and she is dealing with some pretty awful things. And she's dealing with some betrayal and some hurt and just horrible, horrible things. And she's actually one of our college girls who's going on the church plant as well. And I was sitting there talking to her and I love her to death and she's crying. And I was like, are you going to be all right? And I was like, "You know, I know you're getting ready to go on the church plant, but you're dealing with all this stuff. Are you going to be okay over there? Are you going to be all right?" She's super close to my wife. They have a great relationship. I love her to death. And, part of me is like, I want to protect her, right? You know, I want to be like, "You can stay here and we'll take care of you," you know. And I was like, "Are you going to be all right?" And she just looked up at me and she had like tears streaming down her face. But in her eyes, it was not the same thing as those tears. And she just looked right at me and tears are just rolling down her face. And she's like, "I am not going to allow Satan to steal my focus. There is something so much more important." And Satan and the critics and all the junk going on in her life. And here's Nis crying and just looking at me like, "No, I'm not backing down." And to see that faith was something so cool. I told her, I said, "Man, if my daughter turns out like you, Nis, I will be a proud dad." Because she was not going to allow the circumstances around her to keep her faith from being what it needed to be. She's determined to do what she can, and she was determined to ignore the critics because she knows that if she places her faith in God, that He is going to bless not only her life, but the lives of the people around her. We've got to have a determined faith. The third thing is we have to be determined to obey Christ's commands. Jesus stopped and said, "Tell that man to come here." So they called the blind man, saying, "Cheer up, get to your feet. Jesus is calling you." He threw off his cloak and jumped up and came to Jesus. And Jesus asked, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said, "Master, I want to see." You know, Jesus, they're saying he's screaming for Jesus. And Jesus says, "Hey, tell that dude to come over here." And the guy, when he does it, they're like, "Hey, Jesus is calling you." It says that he jumps up, he throws off his cloak, and he runs to Jesus. Because he understands that blessing is also dependent upon the obedience. He understands that Jesus is who can give him the gift that he needs to be healed. And his faith pushes him to obey when Jesus calls. And this morning, I was trying to get one of my kids up, and this happens quite often with my kids, with whenever it comes to the morning especially. And I'm like, "Jackson, get up. We got to get ready. We got camp today. 80 kids going to primary week. Woo! It's going to be a blast." But I'm telling him, "Get up. You know, it's time to get up and go." And he's like, "Okay, I am." And then I start to walk out of the room, and I turn around, and here's Jackson. And I'm like, "Jackson, get up. We've got to get ready." And there he's like this. "Jackson, come on, get up." Already, "I'm itching, I am." And then here he is around the room. I'm like, "Come on." He's like, you know, and I'm like, "Yes." He's like, I was like, "You need to obey." He's like, "I am." I'm like, "No, that is not obeying. You're taking your time doing what you want to do." And Jesus looks at this man, and you don't see Jesus, this guy's yelling for Jesus. Jesus says, "Hey, get up and come over here." The man isn't like, "I'll get right to that. Hold on. You know, no, he throws off his cloak and he runs to the master. And he says, "Master, I want to see." And that term master, you guys, he understands this is the boss man is what he's saying. He's calling him master. He's saying, "You're the one in charge. I'm going to do whatever you say because I understand that my being blessed is going to be dependent upon me having the kind of faith that calls me to respond when you tell me to respond." When you look at your life, is that the kind of faith that you can say you have? You say you want to be blessed by God and that you want something different and you want something better. But do you have the kind of faith that when Jesus says to do something, when God says something, does it overrule your desires and your priorities? Or do you sit there and keep trying to do what you want to do in the hopes that you're going to attain it yourself? See, this blind man understood there's no way I'm going to be healed if I don't do what Jesus says. And you and I have got to come to that same conclusion, that same understanding. We have to be desperate and determined enough to understand when Jesus tells me to do something, I do it. Because that's what faith looks like in action. We've got to be a people who realize I'm going to do whatever Jesus tells me to do. Deuteronomy 28, 1 and 2 says, "If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all the commands I give you, Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on earth. All these blessings will come upon you and accompany you if you obey the Lord your God." See, if is a conditional word, right? So it says, if you do this, then you'll get this. It's like if I tell Jackson, if you clean your room, then I'm going to give you an allowance. He cleans his room, I give him an allowance, and I want to give that to him. I'm longing to give it to him. He was talking the other day. He's like, "Dad, have you seen the new Ninja Turtle toys? They're so awesome." And I went to Walmart and I was like, "They are awesome." And you know, the dad in me just wants to pick up that whole display and take it home and be like, "Ha ha, look at that." Because I long to give him something good. But it wouldn't be healthy for me to do that, first of all. But if I was telling him, "This is what you need to do in order to have this," and then I just gave it to him anyway, it wouldn't mean anything. If it was a conditional word, if I said, "Jackson, if you do your chores, I'll buy you a Ninja Turtle toy." If he does them, he's going to get it. If he doesn't, guess what? He's not getting those awesome Ninja Turtle toys. I am. He's not getting them. If it was a conditional word, and Jesus, you know, you look at that passage in Deuteronomy, if you fully obey, if you carefully follow, then I'm able to bless you. Sometimes we're so frustrated, mad at God. You hear people say, I tried the God thing. I tried the church thing. And it didn't work out well for me. Well, what as I tend to have discussions and conversations with people, and I start to delve into that a little more, what that really means is what they're really saying is, I tried the God thing. I tried the church thing my way, and God didn't give me what I wanted. Because when you do the God thing and the church thing your way instead of God's way, you didn't really do the God thing at all. But yet we expect God to bless that. And God's sitting there shaking his head. He's like, that's not the way it works. I told you to do something. And if you obey me, I'm able to bless your life. If you ignore me, you're taking away the ability for me to bless you because you don't have a trust and a faith in me that really changes your life. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27, Jesus says, Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who's built his house upon the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. And he's saying, you know, everybody out there, you say you want to have this great life. I think about TC, and when TC came, I believe that TC wanted to have something different. I believe he wanted to break the cycle of his family's past and where he had gotten himself, and he wanted to have a great family. He wanted to have kids that loved him and respected him and that knew that he loved and cared for their mom and that he wanted to make a difference in the world. I believe that about TC, but if TC wouldn't have put the words into practice, his house would not have been built on a solid foundation, and when the storms came, it would have crashed. And I believe that the reason that TC is able to go out on this church plant and the reason I believe he's going to make a difference on some college campuses and that his family's going to be great and he's going to break that cycle is because he was able to look and say, I have enough faith to realize when God says something, I'm going to do it because my way didn't work. And he's so much bigger, better, stronger, and more wise than I am. And when I do things his way, it turns out extremely well. And it blesses my life and my wife and my kids and my sister and her kids. And everybody that we come into contact has the ability to see that God is amazing and he wants something so good for them. If that's what you say you want that house that's built on a solid foundation. You don't want to constantly worry about your life falling apart. Ask yourself what kind of faith you have. Are you in a desperate enough place to turn to God and have a desperate faith that will do whatever it takes? Do you have a determined faith that allows you to say, I'm going to do whatever I can on my end. I'm going to ignore the critics around me and I'm going to obey Christ's commands. Is that the kind of faith you can honestly say you have? It's time we stop blaming God for the way our lives haven't been blessed. And it's time that we start looking into ourselves and saying, what is it about my faith that is keeping God from being able to bless me in the way that I know he wants to? Like every good father wants to bless their kid. Where is your faith? Do you have the, when someone asks that question, if they were to say and look at your life and your faith and say, can the kind of faith that you have save you? Can you honestly answer that and say, yeah, it would. We need to be brutally honest with ourselves. Because if we can be honest and be real about who we are and we can turn to God, he's able to bless you with those things. And he wants to give those things to you. You know, in your bulletin, there's a card that says the Crossings Communication Card. And there's a place for your name and address and things like that. But there's more important things than on. There's things on there like, I would like a personal Bible study. Maybe you're listening to this and you're like, I don't really understand what it means to have faith or I would even be putting my faith in. That's fine. Because to be honest, most people sitting in here today, before they ever sit down and study the Bible, they didn't really know that either. But somebody who brought you or invited you can sit down with you and say, this is what it looks like. This is the God that you're being called to have a faith in. This is who he is and this is what he's about. And this is what it means to really have faith in him. Or maybe you're even beyond that. Maybe you're looking and you're saying, man, I need to surrender my life to God. No, I know he's where I want to be. I want that solid foundation. And maybe you look and you say, I want to be baptized. Because the Bible says that when you're baptized, that's that point in your life where you surrender, where you die to yourself and you're washed in that water and your sins are washed away and you come up forgiven and free. And maybe you're at that point, you're like, man, I need to put my faith in Jesus. I think we've got to honestly examine, and that card is a great chance for you to do that. For our members here, we ask you every week to put your card and your contribution there. Your contribution, because obviously we need to keep the ministry moving here. You can look around. I mean, we actually have a decent facility now. We used to be able to say, look around here. Obviously the money's not going. but you know, since the flood destroyed our building and the insurance took care of us, God bless us. But we need to keep the ministry going here. But also, as members, we need you to fill out that card, because if we don't have people who are faithful, if our members aren't faithful, we're not much of a church at all, and we won't make a difference in the world. If you're a guest here, we ask that you not, when that basket goes around today, we don't get you here to get your money. We ask you that you don't put your money in there. We ask that you put that card in there and you allow God a chance to bless your life by saying, God, I'm going to put my faith in you. I'm going to step out in faith and I'm going to look into your word and see what it means. Take a step and allow God a chance to start blessing your life. You know, it's one of those things to where God is longing to do something in your life. But you've got to ask yourself, are you ready? Are you willing to take that step? Are you desperate enough? Are you determined enough to allow God a chance to work? When we're singing this next song, fill out that card. Be desperate. Be determined. And then during the second song, when the basket goes by, place your card in there and allow God a chance to bless your life. I'm going to pray, and then the worship team is going to come up and sing those songs. We take the Lord's Supper every Sunday in our small groups. If you're not part of a small group yet, or yours isn't meeting for some reason today, there's a big kids classroom in that corner of the building upstairs. The Lord's Supper will be prepared for you there.